It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. All right, it was the sound on the city streets in Washington, D.C. as hundreds of thousands descended on Saturday to protest. They are telling us that Black Lives Matter. That's what they're shouting. Meanwhile, there is a move to defund the police. Yes, it's already happening in Minneapolis. It's happening in Los Angeles, the Mayor Garcetti. It's also happening in New York City with Mayor de Blasio, but Matt Flynn from Fox gave a great report on it this morning. Let's listen.
It was 2 weeks ago today that George Floyd was killed here in Minneapolis, and immediately afterward, several city council members banded together and promised they will dismantle the police department. Well, now there's this major announcement that Minneapolis city council members insist they have a veto-proof majority and are moving forward with dismantling the police department. Minneapolis city council members now say 9 out of 13 members support dismantling police, and they will move forward with intermediate steps through policy and budget decisions to end what they call a toxic relationship with the police department.
We're going to create a fear-free future where every life is truly protected and respected. I encourage all of our officers who are still on duty to continue to do your work with compassion, with respect and love. We're going to need every single human to be a part of this project.
Minneapolis City Council members admit they don't have the answers about what a police-free future looks like. They have said they want to defund police and invest in things like juvenile crime prevention programs and rely more on social workers and calling 311 versus 911. Now, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey is at odds with council. He does not support dismantling the police department and was publicly booed at a massive rally over the weekend for standing his ground. The mayor also writes in a statement, and quote, "I'll work relentlessly with Chief Arredondo and alongside community towards deep structural reform and addressing systemic racism in police culture. We're ready to dig in and enact more community-led public safety strategies on behalf of our city, but I do not support abolishing the Minneapolis Police Department." And former Minneapolis officer Derek Chauvin has been charged with second-degree murder in the death of George Floyd, and he is set to make his first appearance in this courthouse behind me later today.
All right, that was Matt Flynn of Fox News this morning, and that's actually, that was a good report, but kind of incomplete. In Minneapolis, we've got the son of the Attorney General in Minneapolis, Jeremiah Ellison, tweeting this, and by the way, he's on the city council, the one that's deciding to do this. And he says, "We're going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department. And when we are done, we're not simply going to glue it back together. We are going to dramatically rethink how we approach public safety and emergency response." Think about this. You know, the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, even though he's been talking, like saying some good things, trust me, we have a picture of him holding up an Antifa manual and smiling and saying that this is going to scare President Trump to death, something basically like that. And this is his son, who's on the Minneapolis City Council, who's declaring we're going to dismantle the Minneapolis police. Can you imagine? Can you just imagine what it's like for the people of Minneapolis right this very moment? And Jacob Frey, the really leftist mayor of Minneapolis, has already made some terrible decisions. You heard Matt refer to him as, you know, getting a hard time from the protesters. But I want you to hear more specifically what they did with him. He came into the crowd of protesters in Minneapolis. He was dressed very casually. He looked just like a kid as he's walking through the crowd. And he stands before the stage where the Black Lives Matter leaders are on the stage. And as usual, it's a black female who is running things. And this is, I want you to hear the interaction. This is how it sounded.
Jacob Fry, we have a yes or no question for you. Hey! Jacob Fry, we have a yes or no question for you. Yes or no, will you commit to defunding Minneapolis Police Department? What did I say? We don't want no more police. Is that clear? We don't want people with guns toting around in our community, shooting us down. You have an answer. It is a yes or a no. It is a yes or a no. Will you defund the Minneapolis Police Department? All right, be quiet, y'all. Be quiet, because it's important that we actually hear this. It's important that we hear this, because if y'all don't know, he's up for re-election next year. If y'all don't know, he's up for re-election next year. And if he says no, guess what we gonna do next year? What you say?
All right, so I'm telling you, that was an act of bravery. Jacob Fry, you know, here they are shouting. You heard the shouting. She's standing right over him. She's on the stage. He's standing down below. He's the mayor. And she's saying, yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. Will you defund the police? Will you defund the police? We want them. We don't want any more mole police. And we demand that you disband the police. And yes or no. And how he's up for election. And we know what we're going to do if he says no. And he bravely says, I do not support defunding the police. I mean, that was an act of bravery. And could I just say, as a teaching moment, in this very second, could I say to you, that I'm telling you, each and every one of you are going to have to make choices in this. You will not be left alone. You will not. Eventually, it will come to you. That's the way a communist totalitarian regime works. They don't let people stay neutral and hidden in their homes with their heads down. I know that's what a lot of Christians like to do. They like to just sort of pretend like it's not happening. But it is happening. And each of you is going to have to take a position on something. You're going to be asked yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. And I'm telling you right now, the only way you can respond to this kind of totalitarianism is to not give an inch. Decide right now. There'll be some other questions that are going to happen, some other positions they're going to make you want to shift or try to force you to shift. And many of you, most of you will. You'll think if you just do this, they'll get off, you know, they'll let you be. Or if I just say this, or if I just act this way, if I just put this hat on, wear this badge, do this in my store, it is never enough. It's better to just not give ground. I'm telling you from experience, it's kind of a principle of the wickedness of human nature. If you give them ground, for me, it was always in debating. It was a debating people on the left. I just, no, I believe what I believe. I'm not going to be shamed. I will not be, you can laugh at me. You can say what you want. I am not giving you ground. No, because I actually believe what I just said. I believe it. And I'm not going to take it back. I'm not going to say anything different. I'm not going to say something to please you. So I'm just saying to you, you probably want to dig down really deep and decide, are you going to equivocate in that manner when the moment comes? And it'll be small moments. Now it'll be with your neighbors and talking to people. If you are equivocating now, trust me, when push comes to shove, you will not stand. And so I'm just saying, all right, so they're standing over him and they're intimidating him big time. And he says, no, I do not support the defunding of police. I thought that was a pretty incredible thing. And I want to give you a little bit of background. We have not spoken about Black Lives Matter in a while. You will notice that much of their leadership, in fact, we've played a couple of clips in this last, what seems like an eternity, but it's only been a little more than a week. black females, because Black Lives Matter is, from my understanding, is a black lesbian-driven organization. It's international. And I'll just read a little bit of their like manifesto to give you an idea. They start out by sounding legitimate, kind of like Southern Poverty Law Center. Yeah, we're all about black people. We want to help poor black people. Well, so that's how Black Lives Matter starts. So they 4 years ago, what is known as Black Lives Matter Global Network began to organize. In the years since, we've committed to struggling together and to imagining and creating a world free of anti-blackness, where every black person has the social, economic, and political power to thrive. Right, I've got no problem with that. Do you? I want people to be equal, you know, regardless of their color. I want them to be able to thrive given the same opportunities. So not too much of a problem with that. But then we move down. We start seeing language change. Black Lives Matter Global Network is as powerful as it is because of our membership, our partners, our supporters, our staff, and you. Our continued commitment to liberation for all black people means we are continuing to work the work of our ancestors and fighting for our collective freedom because it is our duty. So now we began to see Marxist terms slip into this, even though the concept may not jar you. That's the liberation movement that was in South America that was so damaging. It was a communist move. And then we have collective freedom, and that's a buzzword for communism. But let me go further. Every day we recommit to healing ourselves and each other and to co-creating alongside comrades, communist term, allies and family, a culture where each person feels seen, heard, and supported. Okay, so we might say, all right, still not too bad. I mean, maybe they just accidentally used words like that, right? Then we go down and say, we are guided by the fact that all black lives matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability, disability, religious beliefs or disbeliefs, immigration status or location. We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead. And yes, they do. And yes, they do lead. Primarily, they lead in Black Lives Matter. We are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift black trans folk, especially black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence. We build a space that affirms black women and is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children. We foster a queer-affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather, the belief that all in this world are heterosexual. So you move down and you actually see what they're all about. And it is a global movement. And by the way, yes, it is supported and financed by, guess who? George Soros. So I want to read to you briefly. I haven't got time to go through all this. Ryan Bomberger is a frequent guest. Ryan is black. He's half black. He's got a great testimony. He works primarily in the pro-life movement, but he's a great thinker. And he writes an article called The Top 10 Reasons I Won't Support Black Lives Matter. And he says, yes, black lives matter, but truth matters. As a Christian, the church should be leading on these issues instead of sheepishly following a deceptive movement hostile to the gospel. The original Black Lives Matter founders, the Black Lives Matter Foundation, created it to radically shift culture. The far-left Ford Foundation, the world's largest population control organization, vowed to raise $100 million for the Movement for Black Lives. A nationwide coalition of Black Lives Matter groups, including BLMF, released a shocking manifesto of policy positions that are deeply political and deeply disturbing. And Ryan goes through all the reasons, the 10 that I won't get to, but we'll put this on our Facebook page, Top 10 Reasons I Won't Support the Black Lives Matter Movement. By the way, that police captain retired that was guarding his friend's pawn shop when things got so bad in St. Louis last week was shot by a young black man named Stephen Cannon, murdered in the back of the head. But we're not allowed to talk about that, you see, because obviously evil is only done by white policemen, not by black thugs in the street shooting black policemen, because black policemen must be bad too, right? It's very confusing. But really, it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with the total takeover of this country.
Here are Tim and Riley Wildman for the AFA Foundation.
Riley, what is your title?
the director of AFA Foundation.
One of the best ways you can have income for the rest of your life and know that you will be supporting the ministry of American Family Association is to...
to give a gift to American Family Association and American Family Radio.
Do you also deal with people who want to leave AFA in their wills?
Yes, sir. That's exactly why they call. And that's why we also have another option besides a charitable gift annuity. People sometimes also call and do an outright gift or also leave us in their will.
Now, when anyone calls in and asks to talk to you ladies, will all of them talk in a Southern accent like you do?
Yes, they will.
Call Riley Wildman at the AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Leonard Alahar, Director of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Mr. Alahar oversees the office in charge of producing U.S. currency. Philippians 4:19 reminds us of another type of currency, the riches which come from the Lord. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Leonard Alahar as he works to maintain quality assurance in our nation's currency. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
Twitter is censoring the President of the United States, and you should be very alarmed. The President posted a message about the violence and unrest in Minneapolis the other day. He blasted the mayor and governor, both Democrats, for what he called weak leadership. He went on to attack the thugs who are rioting in the streets and warned that he would step in if state leaders refused to act. Well, Twitter censored that part of the tweet, said the president was glorifying violence. Clearly, he was not. And to suggest otherwise is simply not true. Look, I believe in freedom of speech. I believe Twitter has every right to decide what can and cannot be published on their website. But they also have special government protections from lawsuits. They say they are a platform, not a publisher. That being said, Twitter should be stripped of those special protections they're getting from the government. They say they're a platform for free speech, when in fact, they are not. I am Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I want to ask you about some of the events of the week. On Monday, Lafayette Park was cleared of protesters. You've spoken about this. The federal agents who were there report up to you. Did you think it was appropriate for them to use smoke bombs, tear gas, pepper balls, projectiles at what appeared to be peaceful protesters?
They were not peaceful protesters, and that's one of the big lies that the media is seems to be perpetuating.
Three of my CBS colleagues were there. We talked to them. They did not hear warnings. They did not see
the protesters
throwing anything.
There were three warnings given. But let's get back to why we took that action. On Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, okay, there were violent riots at Lafayette Park, where the park police were under constant attack at the behind their bike rack fences. On Sunday, things reached a crescendo. The officers were pummeled with bricks. Crowbars were used to pry up the pavers at the park, and they were hurled at police. There were fires set in not only St. John's Church, but a historic building at Lafayette was burned down.
These were things that looters did.
Not looters. These were the violent rioters who were dominated Lafayette Park.
But when I'm
they broke into the Treasury
Monday,
Department.
When it was peaceful protest.
Let me get to this, because this has been totally obscured by the media. They broke into the Treasury Department, and they were injuring police. That night,
Sunday night,
the Park Police prepared a plan to clear 8th Street and put a larger perimeter around the White House so they could build a more permanent fence on Lafayette.
This is something you approved on Sunday night?
No. The Park Police on their own on Sunday night determined this was the proper approach.
That's just the first part of Attorney General Barr's interview with CBS. You know, actually, let's go ahead and play just the last part. It's short before I introduce Hans. Let's listen.
When I came in Monday, it was clear to me that we did have to increase the perimeter on that side of Lafayette Park and push it out one block. That decision was made by me in the morning. It was communicated to all the police agencies, including the Metropolitan Police, at 2 p.m. that day. The effort was to move the perimeter one block, and it had to be done when we had enough people in place to achieve that. And that decision, as I say, was communicated to the police at 2 p.m. The operation was run by the Park Police. Mm-hmm. The Park Police was facing what they considered to be a very rowdy and non-compliant crowd, and there were projectiles being hurled at the police. And at that point, it was not to respond.
On Monday, you're...
All right, that was CBS with Attorney General Barr yesterday. My guest this morning is Hans von Spakovsky. You know Hans. Hans joins us often. Of course, he's a very good friend. He's with Heritage Foundation. He's a senior legal fellow there, and he's just written an article about whether these rioters will be punished as violent criminals, and we are going to talk about that. But first of all, Hans, good morning. Thanks
good
for
morning,
joining
Sandy.
Us. Hey, let's talk about D.C. first, because over the weekend we had several hundred thousand descend on the Capitol, and we had such a juxtaposition of very concerning things happen by the mayor, by our defense secretary Esper. Can you talk about that for a second? And at any point, did you feel threatened by that? I know you don't live in the city or in the district, and neither did I. But did you feel? What was the mood like, given all those kind of factors that happened on Saturday?
I think a lot of ordinary people are frustrated that we have a mayor who doesn't seem to feel that there's a problem with violent protests and the attempted burning down of one of the most historic churches in the city, and who just seems to be constantly making excuses for people engaging in violence. You know, these have not been peaceful protests. These have not been peaceful protests, like, for example, the Tea Party march in Washington in 2009, in which there wasn't a single iota of violence of any kind. This is the exact opposite of that, and yet we have all these individuals, including the mayor, not only tolerating it, but saying nice things about the protesters, and we have the media, like that reporter at CBS, trying to cover it up and saying that federal officers are somehow overreacting when they have bricks and paving stones being thrown at them.
You know what? I can almost forgive. No, I don't really mean this, but I could almost forgive Mayor Muriel Bowser because she's black and she's a leftist. Of course, she painted in the street leading up to the White House Black Lives Matter. She renamed the plaza across from the White House, I think, Black Lives Matter. So she's done everything she can to help the protesters. She kicked the Utah National Guard out of hotels and said that, and also from Ohio, sent them back home, refused their help right before the weekend. But the thing that really troubled me the most, Hans, was the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, ordering the National Guard to disarm, to wear soft caps, and to publicly undermine the president's call for law and order and the possible use of the military. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree. I find that problematic, too. Look, it's rare that we use the military in this country, inside the country. But on the other hand, it's not that rare that we use the National Guard. And people need to understand there's a difference between our regular Army military forces and the National Guard. You know, the National Guards today are the equivalent of what were the state militias at the time of the colonial government. And they are used all the time, particularly in disaster areas. We've been using them to try to supplement the Border Patrol along the border. And when rioters are doing everything from throwing bricks and paving stones at police to, as you know, throwing Molotov cocktails at police and at police cars, I find the Secretary of Defense, I'm like going, is he living in a fantasy world that he's sending an order like that to the National Guardsmen?
Yeah, this is the thing that this is what concerns me, Hans. It does seem, and has seemed for a long time, whether it's the senators, I'm gonna work on the Republicans now. It's a given that the Democratic senators and congressmen have fallen off the cliff on the left. But we have, you know, these older senators who serve us who also seem clueless, really, about the dangers. I just don't understand that. It's like that D.C., even though it's the center of things, is also insulated from what the rest of the country seems to understand. I just want to see how you – I wonder how you see that.
Well, you know, it's very easy for a lot of limousine liberals and others in the political establishment to be very dismissive of this because most of them live in gated communities where they don't have to be concerned about it. On the other hand, as you know, we have a much younger senator, Tom Cotton, who has gotten in big trouble because he published an op-ed in the New York Times saying you can't allow this kind of violence. You need to stop it. And, you know, the editor of the New York Times, who allowed him to say what is common sense to everyday ordinary Americans, has now resigned because the staff at the New York Times protested that they allowed Tom Cotton to actually say that.
Yes, and God bless Tom Cotton for that, for his courage. And, of course, there are some good senators, but they're very few. And, I say, Hans, it's just amazing to me how clueless. I feel like maybe the Kavanaugh hearings sort of shook up some of those senators and made them realize how rabidly frightening the left has become, and most Americans, again, are able to see that. But for some reason, they seem shocked that they broke into the hearing room and, you know, tried to bang on the walls of the Supreme Court. But I thought maybe that was a wake-up call for them, but I'm not sure. It's as though they're hiding somewhere, you know?
Well, plus it's the way people haven't spoken up out about this. Look, no one wants to diminish the tragedy of what happened in Minneapolis. But this whole idea that all these protesters have, that we are a racist nation, and that police everywhere go after black Americans, that is just not true. I mean, if you look at, for example, police shootings, and this is based on the data and statistics that the Justice Department, the FBI, keep, you can see that that's not true at all. In fact, police officers being killed by black criminals is far, far greater in number than the other way around. And it's just, like I said, no one wants to diminish or the tragedy of what happened in Minneapolis, but that one incident doesn't mean that every single police force in America, all of which are integrated and have many, many black law enforcement officers, that they're all somehow racist. That is just not true. And yet, who have you got out there saying that? Hardly anyone.
Well, you know what? As a matter of fact, Hans, it probably should be pointed out that the three policemen who were with the guy who actually had his knee on George Floyd's neck, one was black, one was Asian, and I heard the other was Hispanic, but I saw his picture. He didn't look Hispanic, so I don't know about that. But all four are being charged, but they're a racial mix. It wasn't like white upon black. One of them was black. So this is how twisted the whole thing is getting. And so now we have these people in the streets who are destroying property. They've destroyed so many minority businesses, burning, looting, yeah, destroying our capital. And I want to talk to you now about what you wrote about this morning about the violent criminals and what can be done with them. Tell us what can be done with them.
Well, in fact, there's a federal law passed by Congress. It's called a Federal Anti-Riot Act. And it makes it a federal crime for individuals to use interstate commerce to participate in, organize, or otherwise engage in violence when it comes to riots. And by using interstate commerce to do it, it means if you travel from California to Virginia, for example, to organize a riot, you're guilty of that law. If you use your telephone, then it crosses state lines. If you use your computer, which obviously crosses state lines, with emails to do all of that, you are violating that federal statute. And there's something extremely unusual in that law. You don't normally see federal criminal statutes that say that the attorney general should prosecute these cases as quickly as possible. I've never seen that in a federal statute. That makes it clear that Congress wanted this statute to be used by the Justice Department to go after folks causing this kind of mayhem and to do it immediately as soon as law enforcement can do it.
Now, as I understand it, Attorney General Barr he's overseeing the arrest of 51 different, what we think are members of Antifa, of a federal crime. So you do suppose then they're charging them on the basis of the statute you just recited to us?
Yes, I would think he would. Although there is another option, and it's out to be used against Antifa. Remember, this is not the first protest in which members of Antifa, they go masked, right? They always have masks and scars over their face so you can't see them. That's against federal law to do that. It was part of a criminal civil rights statute passed to go after the Ku Klux Klan. And in fact, Antifa is using the same kind of tactics that the Ku Klux Klan used, and that's a similar statute. It's a 10-year in-prison potential penalty, that criminal civil rights statute. And that and the Federal Riot Act give the federal government very powerful tools to use against the people who are doing it. They need to break the back of the organizations that have been organizing the violence that's been going on all over the country.
Yes, and as we have said repeatedly, and we'll say again, we know that this is organized. The Justice Department recognizes it's organized because there's similar activity in too many different locations. Those bricks, you know, that keep appearing, my understanding is that that's happening overseas too, that suddenly bricks are appearing. So this sounds like a broader organizational effort than just in this country.
Yeah, it may be. It certainly would be interesting to be inside the Justice Department right now to learn exactly what information they have, because while they've generally said they believe it's organized, they haven't so far given us any of the details of that. We may discover that in some of the indictments of the people that they have arrested and are preparing to charge.
Hans, you know, the left has sort of I would say there are at least three prongs to their strategy when it comes to law and order, and we know that George Soros is connected to all of these efforts. One is that criminal justice reform, which is has been so appealing to the president, but the dark parts of it are that it's driven by the left to release criminals to our streets, and then we have the doing away, the abolishing of police completely, and then, of course, we have the efforts by George Soros to elect these radical district attorneys and prosecutors. My understanding is that prosecutor in St. Louis who just let, in fact, hang on, there's the music. Christian, Hans, can you stay with me just a few more minutes?
Sure.
Okay, because when we come back, let's talk about that whole move by Soros to replace district attorneys in various parts of the country with those that don't care about law and order, and talk about the whole strategy and where you think this thing is going about defunding the police. Can they do that? And what repercussions do you see from that kind of move? My guest is Hans von Spakovsky. He's from the Heritage Foundation, and we'll return with our discussion in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Historian Tom Holland has written a new book in which he presents a robust historical defense of Christianity. The interesting thing is that Holland is an atheist. In his studies of the ancient world, Holland writes, he realized something. Ancient civilizations were utterly cruel. He argued Christianity revolutionized the world. Arguments based on love, compassion, and justice borrow fundamentally from the Christian worldview. Holland and other atheists short-sightedly ignored human depravity. Now, being confronted with evidence of a post-Christian world, they're recognizing their error.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington reveals the deception that plagues our nation's capital.
The mainstream media refuses to tell the truth of what's really happening.
Exposing Washington brings clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C.
The American people must stay informed on what our government is doing.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman brings you the inside scoop of what's happening at our nation's capital.
We must take our country back.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Proverbs says, many are the plans in the mind of a man, but it is the purpose of the Lord that will stand. Brian Fisher here with an excerpt from the Boy to Man book for fathers to read with their 12-year-old sons. Sometimes when God closes a door, it slams on your foot and it can hurt. But God uses closed doors to tell us it's time for a change. I could never have foreseen or predicted the path that my life has taken. One of my mentors told me life must be lived forward, but can only be understood backward. You often cannot see what God is doing when He is in the middle of doing it. That's why we must trust God with every day of our lives. Solomon is exactly right when he says, "A man's steps are from the Lord. How then can a man understand his own way?" Order a copy of the Boy to Man book today as a Father's Day gift at afastore.net, afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The second American Revolution has begun. Unfortunately, there's no guarantee that it will end like the first, with our people living in the freest, most secure, and most prosperous nation ever. Essayist J.R. Nyquist recently called to mind, for example, the French Revolution in 1792, which was inspired by ours, but quickly went in a very different direction. Faced with violent mobs, the government ordered its security forces to submit. When they took a knee, many of them and countless others were murdered by the revolutionaries. Americans committed to the hard-won freedoms we inherited now confront large numbers of peaceful protesters unwittingly enabling revolutionary groups set on overthrowing our republic. It starts with defunding the police and submitting to other demands out of Chairman Mao's playbook, a reality too few are willing or able to acknowledge. We must not go there. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Let me read a headline from Slate Magazine. Just yesterday said the following: peaceful protests are an important tool, but so is violence. So now we have a media filling the airwaves full of this.
Yeah.
Put it all together. And the piece that you mentioned, no more police because we're going to defund those folks. We can't put forward the National Guard because that would be escalation. So now we take off the military from the table. What does that leave, Tucker? Let me tell you what it leaves. Vigilante justice.
That's exactly.
It's you and me and everybody watching this program arming ourselves. Is that how we run a republic? No, sir, it is not.
You're
and you
exactly
do not
right.
want a country that goes there. And that is precisely where the nation is headed. And we need for all of our leadership to understand that. And if Secretary Esper doesn't get it, doesn't understand that the oath is to protect ourselves from threats, both foreign and domestic. By God, get out of the Pentagon and let somebody lead who gets it. Because that is the oath that he took, that I took, and that the people of this country demand of our leadership in this moment, because we are on fire. Someone do something about it.
All right, that was the voice of former CIA officer Brian Dean Wright. He was on with Tucker Carlson a few nights ago, and, you know, what else can you say? Why is it that some of us are so exorcised over this, and yet we have a Secretary of Defense who tells the National Guard to wear soft hats and disarm? And we have, Colin Powell, and we have the former Secretary of Defense, Mattis, you know, shouting and blaming President Trump for dividing the country when we know better. We know what's happening. Hans von Spakovsky is my guest. Hans, let me just ask you, I find myself wondering, you know, we've been on the same team for a long time. And it seems to me 3 months ago, even 2 weeks ago, we had more of a voice. I feel like our voices are being drowned out, and I actually think that most Americans, I think, that's my feel, my sense of things, that most Americans see this and are troubled that they are not agreeing with, that President Trump is crazy to want law and order and that there's no danger and that we need to defund the police, and yet we can't be heard. I don't feel like we're being heard right now. Would you agree with that? I feel like we're muted.
Oh, no, I do agree, and part of that is because the mainstream media is, on the one hand, they're trying to minimize the violence, like that reporter interviewing the attorney general and trying to claim that these protests in Lafayette Square, which, as you know, is a square just north of the White House, that they were peaceful. And the attorney general basically says, what, you know, they're throwing bricks? Setting fires, in fact, burned down a building there. They had crowbars to lever up the paving stones, and yet the reporter is trying to say that it was a peaceful protest. So they're trying to minimize this. Plus, as you know, there have been all kinds of folks, including a former NPR editor who's now an adjunct professor, I think, at one of the universities in D.C., who put out a tweet saying that the only thing wrong with the violence and the fire setting was that they didn't try to burn down the Trump Hotel in D.C. So you not only have them trying to cover it up, they're condoning it, which, of course, encourages even more violence.
Yeah, it's just such strange times. I guess the bottom line of what I would want to say to people listening is don't be fooled by all that you're hearing. I mean, they are trying to manage you. They're trying to discourage you. For one thing, that's what the left always does, to make you feel like nobody agrees with you, you're isolated. And I don't believe that's true. Now, I don't know, Hans, I guess probably I was going to talk to you about attack on police and also the election of these district attorneys who are so radical. But I actually think I want to flip over to voting for a second, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because that's another area of expertise of yours. And I have to say I am deeply concerned, since they have been so effective, meaning the left, has been so effective at disrupting everything. I am worried beyond measure. I think if we had a fair vote in November, I think the president would win, and I think conservatives around the country would win. But I don't have confidence in that, and I want to know what your thoughts are about it.
Yeah, I'm extremely concerned about the upcoming election, particularly the moves in states like California to switch to an all-male election where, you know, the governor out there, Governor Newsom, has ordered that absentee ballots be mailed out to all voters. Well, of course, the problem with that is the voter rolls in California are filled with people who shouldn't be on there, everything from people who are not U.S. citizens to huge numbers of folks who have moved and no longer live at the registered address, and people who are dead too. So you're going to have tens of thousands, if not more, ballots floating around in neighborhoods out there, and I can pretty much guarantee you that vote harvesters will be out there moving around neighborhoods trying to find and collect the ballots of those registered voters who no longer live at their addresses, and I suspect they will ensure that those ballots get voted.
Hans, we have I have a clip of Adam Laxalt, who's the former Nevada Attorney General, talking about what's happening in Nevada. Let's listen to that just for a second, because he tells about what's actually happening on the streets there. This is clip 7. Let's listen.
Here in my swing state, where we have a lot of very close elections, you're seeing videos now of thousands of ballots that are piled up in apartments and trash cans and in hallways. And this is all because we are doing our first mail-in ballot election in the history of our state, all under the cloak of the pandemic, of course. And the Democrats sued a Democrat county, Clark County, which is Greater Las Vegas, in order to get all of these extra things that they want to make sure that they can get their wish list. And what do you think turned out on this thing? Lo and behold, they agreed to all of these conditions in return for the Democrats to get out of the way and let this preliminary election go down. And so what did they get? They got inactive voters. 200,000 of them were mailed ballots all across the greater Las Vegas area. And you know, we have no way to know if these are going to lead to massive voter fraud. And they continue to sue to get rid of signature verifications and to enact the California-style ballot harvesting right here in Nevada. I think it's important to continue to raise attention, to continue to show, like, this video is the reason that we're talking about Nevada voter fraud. Otherwise, you're right, we would have been ignored when we say, hey, things are going on here, when voters all over Southern Nevada are trying to get on Twitter and Facebook and say, I'm getting all these ballots to my house, and people that haven't lived here in 10 years. So we do need to raise the attention. We need to put pressure on the Secretary of State and the local registrars to stop this practice. You know, the interesting thing about this, Tucker, is the Democrat registrar in Clark County said, I don't want to mail inactive voters. He said, we've already purged them because the post office told us they don't live at this address. And what happened? His county commission, almost all Democrats, said, you are going to mail inactive voters. This is all in an affidavit, and you could tell he did it very begrudgingly. And so now, you know, somewhat egg on their face that this registrar was right. And he said, where are these ballots going to go? There's a postal worker in Las Vegas that was quoted saying, you know, I'm seeing ballots everywhere. They're not secure. What is going to happen with all these ballots? So, you know, we have an election in 2 weeks, and in 2 weeks, it's incredibly important. The big game, of course, is the general election. We need to keep our eye on that.
Oh, that's the former Nevada Attorney General, Adam Laxalt. I don't even know what to say about that, Hans. I mean, that's just Nevada. Is that just their primary, you think? Or is this something they've declared for the general election as well?
I can guarantee you that they will be working on making sure that happens during the general election also. Look, you can see what the motives are here when you realize that, look, the two bills that Nancy Pelosi tried to push through Congress to deal with the coronavirus, not only would have made all mail elections mandatory all over the country in November in the midst of the COVID-19 epidemic, but it had all these provisions that had nothing to do with the coronavirus and dealing with it that would have gotten rid of the kind of security protocols that states have in place, like what Adam Laxalt just talked about, getting rid of signature verification, for example. She had a provision in it that said, that would have wiped out all voter ID laws across the country. That's got nothing whatsoever to do with the coronavirus. It's got everything to do with weakening the integrity of the election process and making it easier to cheat and easier to manipulate results. And that tells you right there what the motives are in what's going on.
So far we've got, I know California has moved to mail-in ballots and Nevada. Other states, early on in some of the primaries, I think maybe even in Ohio they did it, but any other states where this is really, they're having great success at going to mail-in ballots?
There is a lawsuit that has been filed by the left in almost every single state across the country to do this. They have met with some lack of success. For example, they try to do the same thing in Texas, and the courts just recently ruled against them. So, yeah, you'll be able to vote by absentee ballot in Texas if you're sick, or disabled or can't make it to the polls, but not everybody is going to get an absentee ballot, which is what they were trying to do in the court. And literally just last week, the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled against the individuals trying to do that.
Where are the Republicans on this? Do we have any champions fighting against it in Congress, Senate or the House?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we do. I mean, all of these kind of provisions, I mean, the Republicans have opposed it in the House, but, of course, they don't have the numbers to stop it. So the bills, even though they may get through the House, Senator McConnell has had a solid line of Republicans stopping any and all of these election provisions when they get to the Senate. So, in fact, look, Senator McConnell understands this issue, these rules governing election administration, and he's been very good about making sure they don't get through Congress.
Hans, let's switch for the last 2 minutes. Let me just ask you this. As you look at this move to defund police, how do you think this is going to be received? I think the results of that are obvious. We don't need to spell out the crime that's going to be happening on the streets.
Right.
But how do you think that's going to be perceived by the American people?
Oh, I think the American people are going to look at this as being absolutely crazy. And I think the lines at gun shops in all of those jurisdictions are going to get very long for people realizing that they're going to have to defend themselves and their property, and that those kind of decisions will lead to anarchy, which is exactly what the violent protesters want.
Totally. That's exactly what Black Lives Matter wants. They don't care about black lives. If they cared about black lives, they'd care about the black policemen that have been shot and killed in the last few weeks.
Right.
But they don't care about that.
And all the minority businesses that have been looted,
yes,
in city after city.
Yeah. Did you see the at the University of Texas on the campus at Austin just a couple of days ago, a group of white protesters, probably Antifa, attacked a black policeman on the campus there, who was just walking,
yeah,
across the plaza? I mean, yeah, Black Lives Matter. Yeah, really? We know they really don't believe that. They want power, and they're white. It has nothing to do with color. We've got these black lesbians leading the Black Lives Matter, and their goal is sexual, I don't know what you'd call it, sexual anarchy. I suppose that would be what I would say about that, and it's become an international movement. But, Hans, do you see us pulling this thing back? How do you see the possibilities here?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on what the federal government, particularly the Justice Department, does in the next few months in rooting out the people who organized the violence and charging them and putting them in prison. And it also, frankly, depends on governors in a lot of different states finally doing something about it. If they don't, if they allow this kind of violence to go unchecked, that it's just going to make Antifa feel stronger, and they will do even more of this in the future.
Yes, you know, I think about some of the revolutionary moves around the world. They always started small. Even Mao Zedong,
yep,
in China, even I would say Nazis, started small. People laughed at Adolf Hitler, but he kept cranking away until he finally won the day. And he did a lot of it through violence, because that seems to be the final card, that, and not to use the name of our president, an accidental play on words, but to use the card of violence to really intimidate people. And that's how Stalin was famous for saying that that's what he find. That was the secret sauce that he used to bring people under subjection. So we need to be serious about the way we respond to this and seriously handle it and not be so cavalier as some in Washington are being. Hans von Spakovsky being the exception. Hans, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.